broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
About for about 3 or 4 years now, we've been doing this every
My
time.
My first reaction is pretty awesome that people are just having sex.
It's something that's behind closed doors.
There have been people who called us pedophiles. They've called us perverts.
Honey. You blew it!
Wait a minute. That woman, she happens to be breastfeeding right here in the middle of McDonald's.
Honey.
Anyway, welcome to the Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. And, of course, news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And it's been a little, I can't tell you, but behind the scene. You know, if you get a backstage pass and you are watching our live streaming video of this show, what's that? You're in your car? You're traveling? I can't do that, Phil. I can't find my, you know, get my laptop. No. You don't have to do that. You can watch live streaming video of this show on your cell phone, on your iPhone, on your Droid, all right? Yes, I did say iPhone because Skyfire is here. It's a beautiful thing. And now, even with the iPhone, not only on demand, but live streaming video of the show. And the reason why I'm bringing all of this up is that you will see the behind the scenes. We've had just a week full of crazy stuff, but I feel confident that we'll get it all worked out. Welcome back to the show, our final hour here of this Thursday night on the Phil Hendry Show. Now, what we were talking about, and I also want to mention that Ron Tarner has been rescheduled for tomorrow night. We called Dr. Tarner. We said, we don't think that your story and your point of view and the things that you want to say will be best served now as opposed to perhaps earlier in our show tomorrow night. So we're going to do that. And so join us for Ron Tarner tomorrow night and other fun things. And, of course, our website, philhendryshow.com. And what else have I forgotten to do? I don't even think I did the affiliate spotlight tonight, but that's okay. Oh, yeah. Portland KXFD 970 and in Kihei. That's Kihei, Hawaii, KAOI 1110 AM, and our website, philhendryshow.com. Now, we were talking about a man in Bel Air, Ohio, and I'm going to pull this up on the map that I have been given here by young Mr. Rance. Bel Air, Ohio, as you might, and is that a river that is running there, Bud?
Yeah, it looks like it might be a storm channel or some, and I'm not even sure about it.
Well, it's Bel Air, Ohio, is right along a rivulet or a river of some kind in the mountain country on the very edge of Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia. So it's not what I would call, although it's not that far from Pittsburgh.
Well, I mean, you don't know in Pittsburgh. It depends on whether or not they got a freeway, man. It doesn't look like they got no freeway anywhere near there.
Well, they got to have, what do you mean a freeway? They got to have an interstate someplace.
Yeah, but they might have to drive for a day, or maybe not a day, but if you got to drive like a half a day to get an interstate, I wouldn't call that convenient, would you?
If you got to drive half a day to get to an interstate, where do you live, man, in the outback of Australia? Where do you have to drive half a day to get to an interstate in America?
Well, like in Ohio.
Yeah, what about down here?
I don't see that. Hold on for a minute. Look at this. Bel Air, Ohio, is near the 470, man. There's the 470. Well, you go right up the 7 to the 470, and from there, you're into Pittsburgh. So,
yeah, you were saying these people are so hick that the man got stuck to the chair because he couldn't wipe, and they got to drive like half a day to get toilet paper.
I never said anything of the sort, Bud.
What were you saying?
You heard what I said. I said that they might be in a very rural area, and being in a rural area, there may be certain, I don't know, insular and provincial customs and manners that makes you know, busting out into the world and telling someone I'm stuck to a toilet one of the most traumatic things that will ever happen. Although I have to be honest with you, telling someone that I'm stuck to a toilet living in a large city would be very traumatic, okay?
You ever had to?
Yeah, just the other... What do you mean if I
haven't had to? Well, I don't know.
No, I haven't had to. But I can tell you this. Whether you live in a big city or a small city, telling somebody, hi, I'm stuck to a toilet in my own filth. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's... No. But that's what happened to this gentleman. So when I was theorizing that, and as I look here, it is a fairly rural section. Bel Air is not a particularly built-up city. It's not the holler. It's not way down in the middle of an area that no outsider gets into. See what I'm saying?
You mean like Deliverance?
Well, I don't know if it's like deliverance, man. Yeah, that is such a cliche, deliverance. People keep bringing that up. But the fact of the matter is that in our country, in America, there are places that rarely are visited by anybody other than the people that live there. As modern a society as we are, we have places where the folks that live there, man, that's whose business it is and anybody else's business, and they live there, and a lot of times they haven't been out of that area, you know.
Do you think we've got, like, Stone Age people?
No, we ain't got no Stone Age people. We've got people who... I saw a special on TV, and just give an example, on hillbillies, and I'm using the term they used on the television program, so forgive me. It was but hillbillies in Kentucky. And we were making jokes. I said, you know, Mitch McConnell is the senator from Kentucky. I don't know how any senator from Kentucky could stand up and start talking about anything other than getting plumbing into his state if you had people like this living there, you know. But these were folks that lived up in the hills in Kentucky, and they were, and I'm telling you the truth right now, they were bathing in rainwater, in a rain barrel.
Yeah, I've seen that before.
You, what do you mean you've seen that before?
Well, I mean, I've seen people have rain barrel bathing.
Yeah, that's what they were doing. This was the water supply, rainwater in a barrel. And they washed their clothes in it. And they had a system of conduits and sort of, what do you call those things, man? God dang it. Not rivulet, but it's they're little... well, you know, little gutters, I should say, that direct the rainwater into these barrels and these other receptacles that they use. And then, okay, then what they did was they had electricity, but it was, I don't know, it was run up the hill on a cord from somewhere. Then they would go out and they foraged for herbs and vegetables.
What do you mean, like weeds and stuff?
Not weeds. I mean, these were foods that they recognized. And I remember I was watching this and thinking, well, this is very similar to, like, natives in New Guinea who know exactly the mushrooms and the different kinds of plants to pick there for food. Because, you know, you pull the wrong mushroom and you die. And the people of New Guinea, they know exactly which mushrooms are delicious in a salad and which will get you high. You know,
really?
Well, I imagine, and then which ones, you know, will kill you. But the people in Kentucky, the same way. They're out there and they're pulling this weed here, and oh, there's that weed there, and they make their food from that, and then they have their gun, and they go out and they kill an animal in it. Now, look, I don't consider myself smarter than them, but those folks, for whatever reason, their lives, and probably for many generations, have revolved around surviving on that level, and that's about as good as it gets, man. You know.
Yeah, but what are you doing for kicks?
Well, they watch TV, but like I say, they've got this electricity they got to run up on a power cord from that feeds like three or four other shacks. It's goofy, but their world revolves around, you know, he's got a girlfriend and she likes him. This is sort of like, you know.
Yeah, his sister.
They didn't say it was his sister.
Well, they're hillbillies.
Well, that don't mean he's having sex with his sister. They're talking about other clans, and they're talking about... And then the closest town was the county seat, and that was like one way, 50 minutes, something like that. So one morning, the guy says, well, got to go into Festley or whatever this town is. This is the county seat, so they're in the county because my brother's in jail. So his brother got thrown in jail somehow in the county seat, so he's got to drive 50 minutes... to get to this county seat to get his brother out of the can. And that's it. I mean...
Well, I mean, don't they, like, go to the mall or anything?
What mall, man? What mall are they going to go to?
You're crazy. You're a dumbass. Shut up, man.
Hey, watch it. Don't call him a dumbass.
What do you mean a mall? I mean if they go to a store or something.
There ain't no stores, man. There's nothing. What do you mean store? They're shooting their food and they're pulling weed. This is in Kentucky. Now, I am not putting this down. What I'm saying is this is America. This is America, and we forget. Now, if we have that in America, and I believe that the poorest person in America, and we've got poor people, I'm not trying to minimize that, but the poorest person in America is wealthier than half the world. I mean, that is how messed up, that ain't how good we are. I'm not saying that. That's how jacked up the world is. That's how jacked up the world is. And so that was very interesting. But the whole thing about the holler and that whole deliverance thing, I don't know about that, man. But, you know, we're going to take a break, but I will tell you this one story. A friend of mine was golfing, and they went down to a golf tournament, and it was in a place in Alabama. Now, I'm not putting Alabama down, but this happened to be a golf course out in the sort of the outskirts of Montgomery, Alabama. And anyway, he hit the ball off the tee, and he shanked it really bad off the fairway, way back into these woods. So he goes to look for the ball, and he comes upon a home, and he sees that staring at him through the window are these two little bald-headed kids, right?
Man, just give me the creeps.
Well, hold on. And he's like, wow. And it starts to rain. So he says, can I stand? He's pointing to the awning. Can I go under there? And these two little bald-headed kids are just like,
man, that's creepy.
You know? So the little bald-headed kids don't say anything. So he goes and he stands under this awning. Well, appearing at the screen door is a larger version of the two little bald-headed kids. Now it's just this big bald-headed guy, right?
Yeah.
So he again says, now to this guy, he says, hi, you know, sorry to bother you, but it's raining. Do you mind if I, can I stand here, or should I just go ahead and make my way back to the clubhouse? The guy goes, you make your way back to the clubhouse. Yeah, you bet I will, you know, and.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, yeah. But he said it creeped him out because all he saw were these figures through the screen door, and they were bald and white and no real facial features, you know.
Maybe it was aliens.
No, there's not. I'm talking about it like it's weird, but no, they were aliens.
Did they have eyebrows?
Yeah, they had eyebrows. All right, we'll be back on a world-famous Phil Hendry show. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. The so-called Albany 7 lotto workers are trying to decide if they'll share the cash with their unlucky co-workers. Remember, we had Bob Green on last night about this, saying that he'd sue anybody that won millions in his store. What would you do? Plus, tennis star David Ferrer hits a ball at a crying baby during a tournament. All right. No, I'm kidding. Let's talk about that. We come back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for Patriots by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back, and don't forget, tomorrow night it's Dr. Ron Tarner with us as he talks about the pressures that many teachers are facing and how they're letting off a little steam on Facebook. Won't be the first time we've talked about that. That's tomorrow night here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. If you join us online at philhendryshow.com, you can watch live streaming video of our show right now. Phil TV in HD, as I take people around the horn, as we like to say, our three-camera angles, as well as our virtual sets, our special effects. And, of course, we do have bring in the net. That is the any one of the live streaming channels like, I don't know, whatever, HBO, or not HBO, but CNN, et cetera, so forth, and so on. So that's kind of what we do. And get over there, you can get a backstage pass and take a look at everything we have, as well as our audio archives. New York State workers share $319 million lottery. They haven't decided if they'll share winnings with the unlucky co-workers. Now, it's an interesting story because yesterday when we were talking to Bob Green about this, he was going to sue his employees for not cutting him in. And during a break, I remember, did I say to you, Bud, or somebody?
Now, you're talking to Ransom. You said that they would.
God, man.
Yeah, man, why don't you drink some Pepto-Bismol or something?
What? Well, what do you mean?
I got stuck.
Yeah, I'll say you got stuck. Anyway,
Let me get some of that Bismol.
Yeah, go get some Bismol, man. So I opined that
That's a Bill O'Reilly word.
What do you mean that's a Bill O'Reilly word?
He goes opine.
Well, guess what? I'm using a word, too.
No.
God. He was saying that he was hoping that they would cut him in. And then during the break, I said to Rance, I said, you know, I bet you anything those folks in New York will be decent enough to cut in this guy. And at the time, there was only one guy who ordinarily was buying the ticket with them, but for whatever reason said, I don't feel lucky. I don't feel like that I, you know, he said, I don't feel like I want to do this today. And guess what? He wound up, you know, not winning with them. So there are seven of them who won $319 million in the Mega Millions lottery, and that was on Thursday, and they're still deciding whether to split it with five unlucky co-workers who chose not to play this time around. Five? I thought there was only one.
Yeah, they said it was only one.
Three women and four men who work as IT specialists and program managers at the New York Division of Housing and Community Renewal and live in the Albany suburbs came forward to claim the fifth largest mega prize in history. They are the so-called Albany Seven, elected to take a lump sum payout, which amounts to $19 million after taxes each. Boy, that's a sweet payout, man.
Boy, no kidding.
After taxes, man, $19 million. That's a beautiful thing, baby. They're among a group of 12 colleagues who, for the past 4 years, have pooled their money in the hopes of winning the biggest jackpot game in the United States. Five of them, however, bowed out of the March 25th purchase, which turned out to be the lucky ticket. Some of us got in and some of us didn't, said Gabriel Mahar, 29, of Colony, who heeded a longtime lottery motto, you gotta play to win. Her dream purchase, she said, was a dishwasher. What the hell's that supposed to mean?
That's what she's gonna buy.
With 19 million bucks? I don't think it's sunk in. You know?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about buying a dishwasher, you want $19 million, it ain't sunk in.
Dude, tell me about it. Oh, I'm going to get a dishwasher. You got $19 million. Why don't you? I got a great idea. Start a dishwasher company. Buy a dishwasher company. All right. The winners said they have not yet decided whether to share their winnings with the five who missed out. Now, I don't know what that would essentially bring their winnings down to, but you're talking instead of seven, there's five more. That's 12. So you split the 319. Actually, it's $200 million. Divided by 12. Rance, do the math on that if you wouldn't mind, because I don't want to, you know, stop down and do it. Although I probably should be able to. Is it about, I don't know what it is.
It's about 15.
Never mind, okay? One co-worker regularly played in the office pool opted out on the night they had the winning ticket, according to an Albany, New York deli owner who knows the winners. They asked him a couple of times, and he said he didn't feel lucky, said Jill Cook, owner of Cook's Deli, where the group often comes for lunch and where she's probably going to touch them up a whole lot. No, I'm kidding. $16.5 million. No kidding, huh? $16.5 million divided by... Wait a minute, man. Divided... $200 million divided by 12... as opposed to seven, is $16.5 million. I got money that says he's going to redo the math and it's going to be different.
Why?
Because he usually does. All right, anyway, while none of the winners went to work this week, the seven co-workers still have not decided whether to retire. One winner said staff training underway for years as part of a state emergency preparedness exercise left him assured that the people who are there are very capable of picking up if we choose not to return. Man, that's something, huh? Offering a blow-by-blow account of the purchase of the lucky ticket, the workers took turns speaking at a press conference at a New York State lottery at the New York State Lottery headquarters. Mike Barth, who lives in Bethlehem, said he was all set to buy the ticket at a convenience store when he shifted out of the checkout line to reach for a Snickers dark candy bar. The man behind him then stepped in front of him. Listen to this bullcrap. I didn't say anything because I wanted to be nice, Barth said, and I later was thinking maybe that guy would have won. While not exactly a Wonka bar containing the golden ticket, the faded candy bar will always hold a sweet spot for Barth. All right. So if they cut the people in, if they divide 200 million, which is what you get after, divided by 12, according to Rance, that's 16.5 million. So they're only losing 2.5 million per. I mean, I say only, you know.
Yeah, easy come, easy go, not your money.
Well, still, man, I mean, you know, I'm not saying easy come, easy go. I'm just saying, you know, it's not like they're getting hit up. They're not getting touched up for $5 million or something. It's $2.5 million. It hurts, but, it, you know, they can cut in five more people, and they still walk home with $16.5 million. At least that's Rance arithmetic. We'll see during this break when I do the math myself. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Coming up, a couple on a blind date discover their brother and sister. Isn't that a happy, that's great. We'll be back. Phil Hendry Show. What a happy moment that must be. for them.
Phil Hendry. For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, radio for Patriots, by Patriots, every night, Monday through Friday. And, of course, on Saturday nights, we have a local show here in the Los Angeles area called, well, it's called the Phil Hendry Show. It's on KFI. During the week, we are on K-Talk 1150 and great stations across the country, KNEW in San Francisco, WWRL in New York, WTKK in Boston, our good friends in Detroit, WDTW. Our good friends in Atlanta, WCFO in Miami, WAXY. Who am I forgetting, man? I'm not forgetting KRCN in Denver. We're in Dallas, KPRC in Houston. I mean, some fantastic stations, great people. We thank you for being with us here as the Phil Hendry Show continues to lockstep into the future here. Radio for Patriots by Patriots. You know, if you're an American and you value America and you have American values, you're going to find interest, you're going to find something important, something of substance in every story that may be on your computer, on your iPhone, on your Droid, or wherever you're pulling your news, if you'll pardon the expression, each day. In Edinburgh, Scotland, after months of flirtatious online correspondence, Sarah Kemp and George Bentley decided to finally meet up. Turns out the two had an awful lot in common, their brother and sister. Yeah, now, yeah.
She's going to hell, this bitch.
Now, Sarah and George were born in Ashford, Kent.
What are you trying to talk about American values?
I am talking about American values, and this ain't them. This is Scotland.
Ain't you from there?
I ain't from there. No, my ancestors are. Now, you know, Sarah and George were born in Ashford, Kent, where they spent an idyllic childhood with parents Felicity and David Bentley. But they lost touch in 1975. Uh-huh.
What, you ditched your line or something?
Anyway, I don't mean to be childish. Sarah, who was six, joined her mom in Edinburgh, while David, nine, went with his father to East London. Neither parent remarried, but the two families never spoke again. God, that's sad.
Yes, it's sad.
As adults, Sarah and George tried to make contact, but had so little information that they were unable to trace each other's whereabouts. The search was made more difficult when Sarah married in 1989. She divorced a decade later, but kept her husband's surname of Kemp. George, age 47, a builder, said, "I had absolutely no idea where she was. I was also searching for Sarah Bentley's rather than Sarah Kemp's, as I obviously didn't know she was married. After a while, I think both Sarah and I gave up looking. Not being too bright, I should have realized that she might have had a different last name because she had been married, but that's what you get when you're the son of two people who were also brother and sister." And no, I'm just lying about that. But against the odds, the siblings were reunited after joining casual dating site ForgetDinner.com UK. Yeah.
What's that mean?
It means forget dinner is what it means. What does that mean, forget dinner?
That's what he just asked.
They began courting online and frequently exchanged emails and even photographs. After 3 months, they decided to, quote, bite the bullet and met for lunch at the White Horse, George's local pub in East Ham. Sarah said, "I would never have agreed to go to London on a blind date, but we hit it off from the beginning and our relationship blossomed as we emailed each other more and more often. And then we found out we had the same parents, and I thought, what are the odds of that? And so I said, what the hell? I love London." No, she didn't say that, but they would find out. Oh, yeah, they'd find out real, real fast, man. She added, "We had so much in common. We finally really enjoyed each other's company. It was as if we'd known each other all of our lives." Imagine that. After talking about their childhoods for more than an hour, the pair finally twigged, and that must be some British term, that they were related, at which time George started to sing.
When you're really ready to play, play Prem Nevada.
Well, he thought he hit the... Anyway, George said this was the meeting of a lifetime, and we're now planning to see each other as often as possible to catch up on the time spent apart, and yes, if it's so, you know, if we choose, have sex.
Hey! They didn't say that!
No, they didn't. Despite their embarrassment, they celebrated the union with a bottle of champagne and spent the rest of the evening getting slowly sozzled. Is that nuts or what? It's your sister, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, what if you're having a good time?
They were having a good time.
You know, though.
What are you talking about?
I mean, if you didn't know it was going to be your sister. It turned out you're a sister, but also you may be interested in her.
It's my sister, but I may be interested in her?
You're all inbred and everything, man.
Shut up.
Hey. You ought to expect that. What are you talking about anyway?
All I'm saying is, you know, I know you're my sister, but I believe I could be interested in you. Are you free now? I don't know.
You're sick, dude. You're sick. You know, if you find out it's your sister, isn't that something that is automatically going to put the brakes on whatever it is you think you're feeling, okay? You know, I mean, that's just goofy. Anyway, since the date took place, the siblings have met twice more in Edinburgh. George said this was the meeting of a lifetime. A spokesman for bookies, William Hill, said the chances of the pair meeting in such a way were 500 million to one. That's what I call...
When you're really ready to play.
So anyway, 500, he added they are unlucky in love, but clearly not unlucky in life. So that's a beautiful thing there, man.
What's beautiful about it? The guy's all... What if he didn't discover his sister until the next day?
Well, then I guess he would have had a problem.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, they found out that they were related when they... It says there they slowly twigged that they were related. I don't think that there was anything unusual other than the following thing. They met on whatever it's called, a dating service, and they meet, and they're obviously a couple of upstanding people, so they, you know, they sat down in an open restaurant, and they're having a nice time, and they're talking, and they come to realize that they are actually, you know, they've been looking for each other anyway, you know?
Yeah, but what if the guy is all in the mood for, you know, being all, you know, Eric, you know, I don't know.
If he was in the mood for sex, is that what you're trying to spit out, bud?
Yeah.
Well, like I said, man, that probably really put him off that, man, when he find out, hi, and you're who? I'm your sister. That's swell.
Yeah, that probably put him off it all right.
Yeah. So all's well that ends well there, because like the guy said there, the bookie, he said they were unlucky in love, and Sonny Erickson at the Sonny Erickson Open quarterfinals, and David Ferrer wasn't too happy either. Trailing in his match and annoyed by the crying, Ferrer directed a forehand lob toward... the infant! Well, we'll find out just how serious that was, in point of fact. He was having a very, very tough afternoon. Let's listen here as the play-by-play announcers react to David Ferrer hitting a ball at a crying baby.
A baby crying out. Ferrer's going to serve through it. Hey, he's struggling right now. And he whacks that ball way up in the seats. I'll get some whistles and perhaps a warning.
He was hitting it towards the baby. You can't do that. That's why you get the booze.
She's going to hell, this bitch.
All right, so anyway, trailing in his match and annoyed by the crying, Ferrer directed a forehand lob toward the infant after losing his serve midway through the second set on Wednesday. The ball didn't come close to the youngster when it landed in the stands, but the crying did stop.
All right.
That ain't the whole... That's... The ball didn't come close to the youngster, but the crying stopped. It was in one moment of the match, but nothing special, Ferrer said. It was not the problem, meaning the baby crying was not the problem. Instead, the Spaniard blamed a case of indigestion he lost to American Marty Fish 7-5-6-2. Fish said he didn't see Ferrer hit the ball into the stands. He said he'd probably take that one back if he could. He's a very nice guy. He was obviously very flustered. World-famous Phil Henry Show will be back here. Online presence, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. A teacher with Asperger's snaps at a fat student and asks him if he ate his homework. Find out about that on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. for Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
With Asperger's faces possible firing. You know, we are in the middle of, as I've said for you know, almost 4 years now, we're in the middle of a media revolution. We're in the middle of the shaking down of an entire industry. You're being told certain things are news and they're not. You're being told certain things are newsworthy and they're not. You're being fed editorial opinion as news story. And I really don't know whether, and I say this with the greatest respect, as much as we've talked about it, I really don't know whether you guys get it yet. Yeah, I know there's all kinds of geniuses in the world. I know there's people, yeah, I understand, Phil. Believe me, yeah, I get you. But the fact is, when I look at the world around me each and every day, I see people swallowing the same horse dung. The same people who will tell you, oh, I don't trust the media. I don't believe the media. I think the media is slanted. I think the media this. I think the media that. And they wind up swallowing the same stuff. Look at this story here. Well, it's a non-story. There is no story. Example, that Ferrer story, lob the ball toward an infant, not a story. Not a story at all. The GoDaddy CEO, Bob Parsons, who shot an elephant that fed a village of people in an area of Africa where they have problems with rogue elephants, and he was doing this so they could feed these people. There was absolutely nothing wrong with this. Well, this story has been artificially kept alive by the news media, by the Daily News. Not even it's not even a story having anything to do with people, you know, who are against hunting. It's just, it's a manipulation of the process, and I'm personally getting sick and tired of looking at it. I'll give an example. We've had stories, Libya is important. Is it important to the American people? The answer to that question is no, it isn't. It's interesting. But nobody in America's got any opinion on it because they don't have the time to be thinking about Libya right now. They got other things on their minds. So no, it's not a story. Syria? Syria's a story. Syria's an important story. Is it interesting to the American people? No, it's not interesting to the American people. They got other things on their minds right now. Is it an important story? Sure it is. Should you be studying that story? No, you should not. You have other things that are more important right now. If you have the time, go ahead and take a look at the Syria story. I will, because that's my job. I ain't going to bore you with it, though. I can tell you what it's about. I don't know whether you'd understand or not. I'm not saying I'm smarter than you. I'm saying I got more time to think of these things and read about these things and figure these things out, okay? And when I get done reading about 80% of the garbage that's fed me each and every day as news, I realize 80% of it isn't news at all. It's not a story at all. It wouldn't have been a story were it not for the fact that we have this big wide world web that has to have, it's like a big mouth. It has to have something to eat. It's chewing up every little tidbit of information. Stupid stuff. Asinine stuff that's local in nature and would never make the World Wide Web were it not for the fact the World Wide Web needs stuff to, you know, to talk about. I read a story, that David Ferrer story, the biggest zero story in the day. 2 days I've been looking at that story. This is an important thing to understand because every day this happens to you. Every day you're fed these stories that you're told are news stories and they're not. Now, I have a bunch of news stories here that were given to me by my producer, and they all qualify for that category. There's nothing here. You guys have been told that you got to care about stuff that is not just not important at all, okay? You guys are told that you have to care about something because there's some talk show host someplace that wants to talk about it, and so you got to get riled up about it, and suddenly that dumbass thinks he's got people talking about something nobody gave a damn about. These were stories once upon a time that wouldn't even have been stories. A Connecticut math teacher is fighting to keep his job after asking an overweight student if he ate his homework and telling another student that he hates him. Brookfield High School teacher Robert Wolkine was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome in 2002, a high-functioning form of autism in which social interactions can be awkward, making it difficult to recognize and comprehend other people's emotions. Do you realize that this is autism? And 10 years ago, this isn't a story, but today, because we got 85 million talk shows and 16,000 places to stick these stories, this is now national news. Watch what I do with it. Breast milk baby doll has parents peeved. Are they telling you the truth? Probably not. Are parents peeved? Maybe there's one or two that are peeved. Maybe there's three or four. I don't know. A new doll that mimics the act of breastfeeding has some parents up in arms, and the manufacturer defending itself against accusations of perversion. Called Breast Milk Baby, the doll sold through Berusian Toys for $89 allows children to imitate the act of breastfeeding by using a special halter top that comes with the toy. The top is made from a colorful material with two flowers positioned where nipples would be. When the doll's mouth is brought close to a sensor embedded in the flower, the baby makes motions and sounds. Jesus. Anyway, critics say the doll is over-sexualizing young girls. Well, no, because breastfeeding a baby is not sex. Are you stupid or something? What it is doing is it's giving girls an adult behavior or adult, an adult behavior when they're little girls. They don't need to be learning these adult behaviors as little girls. There's going to be plenty of time to learn how to breastfeed a kid. I mean, what exactly is it that we need our little girls to learn these days? What do we want to expose them to? Breastfeeding? I don't know if that's number one on the list. But the company and supporters said the toys are meant to teach young girls about the nurturing skills they'll need later in life. They're going to need a lot of skills later in life. Maybe they want to be a chemist. Maybe they want to do a lot of things. But you clowns that make these baby dolls, you figure might as well get them rolling on this because, you know, I make dolls for a living, and I don't know what anybody else is doing. I got to sell some dolls, and, man, I've about run out of Barbie. The breast milk baby doll controversy. Dennis Lewis, the U.S. spokesman for Bergen Toys, talks to ABC News in an interview conducted over Skype, whatever, complaining the company has faced considerable criticism.
There have been people who called us pedophiles. They've called us perverts. They've said we're endangering the innocence of little girls. A little girl who plays with a breast milk baby now is just going to think breastfeeding is the normal way to feed a baby.
She'd know that breastfeeding is a normal way to feed a baby as an adult, man. Does she need to find that out now? What's your hurry there, Dennis? My Fox New York City spoke with passerbys about that. These are always not interesting.
I think it's a little inappropriate at a very young age.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And they have a lot of time to figure that stuff out. Yep. I mean, they don't need to worry about it when they're kids.
Okay, he laughed.
They don't need to know about that at that age. Now.
All right, so that was, meaningless. And they were all laughing, too. Critics say the doll is over-sexualizing the young girls. Now, just because they're breastfeeding a baby, that is not sex. That's breastfeeding a baby. It's adult behavior, though, and I agree that a little kid doesn't need to learn that right away. There's other things to do, like be a kid. Further fueling the controversy, the website for Bergwin Toys, or Bergwin Toys, features an image of Mary breastfeeding the baby Jesus. Boy, you guys are really, these cats are really pushing it, man. The image is accompanied by the title, God Supports the Breast Milk Baby. Well, now that is a guy who is trying to piss people off. Why? You don't need to put that in the commercial. You don't need to put that in the ad copy. So that's the story. Now, a child psychiatrist by the name of Ned Halliwell says parents have absolutely nothing to worry about. I don't think it's sexualizing anymore the little boy standing next to his father shaving and putting on shaving cream. The only way harm can be done with this doll is if you beat this kid over the head with the doll. Well, what do you call beating him over the head with the doll? These are little girls. And this jackass says, well, they're going to need these nurturing skills. Well, there's no question they're going to need nurturing skills. There's a lot of ways that they can get them. And at what age do they need to start getting them, man? At what age do they need to start getting them? All right. do want to thank, as usual, Lloyd Bonafide for joining us tonight as we talked about what a dumbass his son was, jumping on a hand grenade. And we thank you for joining us tomorrow. It's going to be Ron Tarner, Dr. Ron Tarner, who is a school teacher and is going to be talking with us about using Facebook to take out their aggression on students that are pissing them off. We are the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and every night we are here with you until 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. And, of course, we're online at philhendryshow.com. If you get a backstage pass, you can look at live streaming video of our show. That's a pretty whole other story. Our show is produced by Jason Rantz. Our technical director is Rick Johnson. Our associate producer is Dan Northcraft. You can pick up our Phil Hendry Show coffee mug, the Phil Hendry Show shot glass, all of our podcasts, all of our archives, and Phil TV at philhendryshow.com. Phil Hendry.